Design Intent Podcast. This is number 5, and I am your host, Tony Lado, with...
I'm Daniel Phipps.
And Aaron Hernandez.
Today we've got Michael Ellis-Smith, VP of Design for Commercial at Dell Technologies. Michael, thanks for coming. Appreciate it.
Glad to be here on a Friday afternoon.
We know you want to get home. You have a very long commute, and... some beer you want to drink, yeah?
Sure.
Why not? Okay. I think today is International Beer Day.
I believe.
Officially
it is?
Yeah, for real.
Yeah.
Obviously not.
Yeah. But I'm enjoying this purified water right now, so it's really...
So before we kind of get into the big questions, we're going to throw out a couple of things to kind of get you warmed up a little bit. Why did you choose ID?
Why did I choose ID? Well, how much time do we have?
As much time as you want.
I didn't know.
ID chose him.
No, it was not my first choice. But I found out about it when I was a senior in high school.
Oh. What was your first choice?
I wanted to be in the military.
Ah, okay.
I had a nomination to the U.S. Naval Academy.
Doing what in the military?
I wanted to be a pilot.
Wow. Nice. Okay.
So, yeah. Wait, so you gave up a Naval Academy?
I didn't say I gave it up. I did say I got nominated.
Oh.
To say it didn't work out. But I was in Navy ROTC in school for a bit.
Okay.
And then I found out I had an eye condition that was not going to
allow
me to fly. So I decided to stick to ID full time.
Wow. Awesome. Yeah. Great. Hey, what was your first ID job?
My first ID job, I would say, was my co-op experience. It was in Atlanta, Georgia, with a company named Industrial Design Associates. At the time, it was the largest design firm in the Southeast.
So that's where you met. And then you met Joe?
I met Joe there.
And Alex
Chun?
Chun, that's right.
He worked. And my wife.
Oh, really? Did she work there?
She did.
Okay. I didn't know that.
In design?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
She has a degree in ID from Cleveland State of Art.
Does she ever provide critiques for you?
Worse.
Worst job, ID or otherwise?
My very first job, bagging groceries, 15 years old.
Working on tips,
wearing a little red bow tie.
Nice.
Georgia heat.
Do you have any particular favorite design object that you like to gush over?
Oh, wow. I didn't expect that one. Let's come back to that.
Okay. Favorite designer?
You, Tony.
Nice. That's the second time.
Paul said that, too.
Wow.
Awesome.
Wow. Don't let your head get too big.
Wow. Too bad I didn't write your reviews.
I do yours.
I know you do. Wow, that's... I got it in... This is going to be official. Everybody has one or two skeleton products.
What, only one or two?
Yeah, maybe more. I mean, I can think of a dozen, but, you know... Your favorite worst skeleton.
Could be anywhere. It doesn't have to be Dell thing or not.
There's one that comes to mind immediately, although it popped in my head as soon as you said it. And it was a Inspiron notebook that we made some regretful decisions on.
Inspiron, huh?
Many years ago.
That's what you call a regretful decision.
Yes.
Anything specific on it?
You can just one of those things where you keep thinking it's going to get better, and it never does.
And it just goes the other direction.
Yeah. This particular one had to do with I think we all had to design something that's really inexpensive, and then you try to make it look more valuable than it is by not spending any money on it. So you choose other methods, such as weird patterns and textures. And it, always looks good in an ID model, but when you scale it into hundreds of thousands of products, and being told it's going to be in a specific region, then it goes global, and you realize, can't get that. So,
what's your proudest product in the market? Products, and that would be one thing.
Gosh, that's a. Well, I'll tell you this. Very early in my career, as I was a design co-op student, I had the opportunity to spend my first 6 months working in a model shop. While I did not design this product, I worked on it. So I would say that if you've ever heard of the Reebok Step, it was used the first step aerobics and still in production today.
Mm.
Designed in 1988. And I remember doing the mahogany models for that and thinking, what a stupid idea. And it taught me a very important lesson. The guy, he was a Gold Gym owner, and he had this instructor that had this idea of these boxes they're doing this class, and he asked her, well, this is very popular. She's like, oh yeah, they're full. All these classes are full. And he'd taken over a private gym, and said, I want to go see what I can do. So he went to an architect firm initially, and they said, oh no, you need to go to an industrial design firm. Our firm was known for blow molding and rotational molding and stuff like that. So designers work on it, and I work on the model making and thinking, gosh, this is what we're doing in 100 degree heat, a shop, carbon mahogany. And I think a few years later, he sold it to Reebok for about $45 million.
Wow.
And it's still in production today.
Yeah.
It's one of those, the IDSA used to do these designs of the decades.
Yeah.
A decade. It's crazy. I was just in Asia and was in the gym, and it's all still
there. And there it was.
Same design, it hadn't changed.
They're like, I built the model of that
30 years ago.
Yeah, nice.
It's interesting. That's not. I mean, that's just one of those like iconic things you learn the lesson.
Mm.
You know, but I think I've worked on just about every category at Dell. Obviously, when you're leading a team, you don't think of it as really your design, but you think of you help shepherd something through. Obviously, the XPS line as it matured, Alienware, all good stuff.
Yeah.
But I think some of the toughest work I did was at Hamilton Beach, because again, low margin, high volume stuff. There's some pretty good stuff to work on.
Great. Well, how about this is good. Give us your background, sort of out of college, first few jobs prior to getting to Dell.
Already mentioned the co-op, so they ended up hiring me about a week before graduation, so I was thankful.
Hmm.
So I graduated like on a Friday or Saturday. And
had a job already.
Was at work on Monday. In 1991, there wasn't a lot of design jobs out there, but I was happy to have it. So I worked there spent a year working there as a co-op student, and then I ended up working there for another 3 years, I guess, 2.5. And then I went into corporate, which was coming out of Mississauga, Ontario, called Beltronics Limited. They made radar detectors. So they were building a technology park and right outside of Atlanta. They were hiring designers and software engineers and everything else, and going into telecom. So we did a lot of caller ID products. We did OEM products for Mobile Telecom. So that was my first foray into corporate design, which was really interesting because that was the first time I got to work with PCB designers, software, mechanical, electrical. Basically, it was just almost what people would call an agile team today, working together. And there was only one of us in each discipline. So, I worked there for about 4 years. And then I went to Plantronics in Santa Cruz, California, working on headsets. Really cool place to work. One of the best places I've ever worked.
Yeah, Santa Cruz is nice.
Yeah, being 10 blocks from the beach didn't hurt. Riding my bike to work, that was good. And then we started a family and decided to move back east to be closer to in-laws and family. And we went to Richmond. And I was at Hamilton Beach, Proctor Silex. I was a senior designer there for 3 years. And then an opportunity came to me to move into product planning and marketing. So I ran the P&L marketing team for, I guess, two and a half years, and then Dell. And so I've been here almost 16 years.
Oh, wow. Now that's an interesting move to go from design into mm-hmm. a different expertise. What made you feel like, hey, this is a good move or not?
Well, that's a really good question.
Because I always find it fascinating when people do that.
So it was interesting to me. The design team there was very much a service shop. You know, it's kind of job sheet comes, you churn and
sure.
work on something. And I remember thinking, like, gosh, man, if they would just bring design to the strategy side of what we're trying to
sure.
do, we could be so much more effective. And I was already very much engaged in customer research and concepting and things of that nature. But and it was just kind of a strange way it happened. We had one of our product planners leave, and they didn't fill the position. And I was working on several products in that category. And I was literally just having a beer with the director of marketing, the guy who ran that team. And I asked him, what's up? When are you going to replace the product planner? We have decisions to make, and everything's kind of on hold. And we have this Walmart meeting coming up and a bunch of other stuff. And he's like, why, are you interested? And I'm like, no. I'm like, I'm good. He's like, no, man, I think you'd be great at it. And we started talking about it a little bit more, and I didn't think he was very serious. And the next morning, his boss called me at my desk. Back when we had desk phones. And he said, hey, Michael, I hear you're interested in this product planning.
You're like, wait a minute.
He goes, well, we'd like to get you started on a, you know, internal interview tomorrow. Are you ready to go? I'm like, whoa.
So yeah.
Gave some thought, and I'm like, you know, I'm always complaining about marketing and these sure. guys not knowing what they're doing. I'm like, well, maybe I should go over and see what it's all about.
Okay.
So I figured, you know, this was a good way for me to
get good exposure to that. Good
exposure to, you know, end-to-end product development, expand my sphere of knowledge. And,
sure. And I guess you could do what you were always saying needed to be done, which is sort of elevating that position of design. And
so it was, wasn't a, you know, people management position, but it was a category management.
Yeah.
And so, and I was like, well, I don't have an MBA or a finance background. We'll teach you that. Don't worry about that. So it was pretty interesting. So I learned a ton. I think that decision is what propelled me in my career.
Okay. So,
I spent a lot of, I learned what, you know, just having a better mousetrap is, if you can't sell it, doesn't
right.
matter, right? So it's, so that's what kind of led to that decision, and it worked out. So
okay.
That's pretty good.
I think that's really good because it allows you to see bigger picture and you just sort of get outside the design bubble. So
it was, you know, learning about, you know, supply chain management, learning about how you sell, like who we, you know, our customers were Target, Costco, Best Buy, Walmart, all the big box stores. And then when you go to Bentonville, Arkansas, and you sit there and you're across the table from a buyer and trying to convince them,
sure,
you know, this is a better way to go. What was interesting, I found that my design skills and design, you know, before this became this sort of cliche phrase of design thinking, really helped. Instead of just using spreadsheets and things that
sure.
I would bring a visual content to, like, I'd have the team render up the entire planogram of Walmart's shelves and show them kind of what it was going to look like, and it was effective. And so, and then we also had three brands. And they were struggling with NRE cost, and we were starting to develop some things in Asia, and we really wanted to get this kind of opening price point, what we call. So I went to the design team and said, hey, let's get a design together, and then was able to negotiate with our ODM, you know, original design manufacturer. They could keep the global rights on the design. They would pay for our whole tool. And it was like a 7 million unit type thing. Huh. But we're able to keep North America, you know, LATAM rights for it. And bam, just like that, market share grew 5%.
Wow.
But more importantly, that using the design background to think it through how we might architect the entire line with different brands was helpful in the product planning side.
Yeah.
Even at Dell, you'll find a lot of our product planners are technical background, like engineering or
other
sorts of. Yeah,
cool.
That's good.
So what about Adele? What have you been to almost 16 years? You've worked on many product lines.
Yep. So I started out with printers. The two of you guys know our former boss and mentor. He also went to Auburn, such the same as me. I didn't know him very well, but he had called and asked me if I was interested in a job at Dell? And I said, no, Texas, no. Dell, not really, you know, yeah. I wasn't really known for design
sure.
in 2003. So I was kind of like, but I always heard Austin was cool. But I told him what I was doing. I'm in product planning now. Love it. Doing strategy. I'm like going back on the board. And he said, what if I told you you didn't have to do that? What if it's more a strategic position? And I started taking him through that story I just told you guys about, like how we use design to manage design strategy across multiple brands. And he's like, well, it's perfect because we need somebody who can help us with design strategy, working with three OEMs, Fuji Xerox, Lexmark, and Samsung.
On the printing.
To help develop a design strategy where we can have Dell's unique design language, but having to work with them and eventually influence their architecture. And how do we manage channels and pricing and all that sort of stuff. Very similar to what I was doing in Hamilton Beach, but at a much larger global scale. So that was my first job. So I was just a IC designer, individual contributor. And did that for a couple of years, and then they created a management position. Originally somebody else had that, but then they decided that wasn't for them, so they asked me to do it. And then I found out my job was moving to Singapore. So that was kind of...
Yeah.
Wow, okay. So let's move my family across
some card tricks. Yeah.
So what I did, I helped bring that studio up and hire my replacement before I knew what I was doing next. And then I got asked to go lead consumer notebooks. So that's pretty interesting. So I did that for a couple of years, and then I got expanded to all consumer products. So desktops and notebooks. And then that expanded to what was called at that time CSMB, consumer small medium business. And then that expanded to include Singapore and Taipei design office. So I was managing those two locations. Okay. So that was pretty much everything on CSMB, which kind of grew into, we acquired Alienware, we had started the Venue phone line and tablets, and then all then you remember the displays and keyboards and
sure, yeah, Singapore. Yeah.
Had that for a bit of a time. And so then a couple years later, we kind of reorganized, and I ended up focusing on a mobility initiative, is what I call it. They went back to look at phones again. Spent a lot of time doing that, and then eventually Michael Dell decided to stop the investment there, and actually it was the right decision at the time. So it was just a bloodbath between Samsung and Apple at the time.
Sure.
So then I was doing XPS and Alienware and tablets, and then I worked with Tony. And then I guess about 2.5 years ago, I got tapped on the shoulder to do what I'm doing now, which is the commercial design.
Nice. So obviously there's been some ups and downs at Dell. What do you think about that? Like how did you persevere through some of the kind of rough patches? I know 06, 07, maybe sometime after that, we had the crash, and then just the way our org kind of reorged a few times.
Sometimes you can, there were some times where you're like, man, this is just sucky.
Yeah.
But, I don't know what it, we got into this, us sitting here around the same lesson because we like creating stuff. And sometimes if you start to internalize everything and start going, oh man, woe is me, this feels like Groundhog Day.
Yeah.
But sometimes you start to work on something else and re-energize it. You start to go, wow, okay, this is kind of cool. I'm going to keep moving forward. So that's kind of usually what we had to do.
Yeah.
And Pinot Noir helps.
Yeah. A little extra glass of wine.
Late night calls.
Take the edge off at the end of the day.
Now, how many people are in your organization?
Right now there's 20.
20. And you've got folks around the globe, and plus other EDG folks that we work with closely. Mm-hmm. How do you manage dealing with all of these different personalities, locations, keeping everybody moving in the same direction, and keep us all marching one way, if you can?
Well, how do you think I'm doing, Tony? You're part of that group.
Of course. I just don't want to know that. I want to know your opinion.
I think it's a lot of communication, for sure. You know, not trying to... The key is not to wait too long to communicate with, especially with people you're working with overseas. You have to stay in constant contact. You know, there's a typhoon going through just last night with Taiwan, right? So I was on my WhatsApp, chatting with guys. Turns out it's okay. But, you know, you kind of use it as a staying, you know, as constant contact as you can. Make sure you're listening, which is possible. I would say that's kind of the key.
Okay. What are the traits you think that are useful for you as a leader at Dell? Help, you know, assisting with that.
The traits in other people, or the traits that you would have to have with
that you have. Yeah, you've obviously. I mean, I've known you for a while, and I've seen changes. So. That are better.
I think, you know, constantly checking yourself, self-awareness, seeking feedback, and being willing to take that feedback and act on it, I think is critical. That's for no matter where you are in your career. Again, empathy, you know, constantly developing that skill, or that
sure.
notion of empathy. You know, that sounds like a cliche, but it's true. I think about products that are probably programs that were the most difficult to work on is when, you know, you have multiple functions that were moving in opposite directions.
Mm-hmm.
So I think what I've probably learned over the last few years more than anything is if you sense that or you see that happening versus running away from it or avoiding the conflict, how do you try to build some sort of notion of let's all get together and
let's make sure we don't,
address it head on, and this isn't personal. You know,
sure.
It's and usually the most successful things or outcomes are when people are like they understand each other's metrics and what they're being measured on, and when those things are opposing, they acknowledge it and then move forward. You know, so
okay.
I think early on at Dell, I think there wasn't too much of, at least in my situation, we would see that and be super frustrated and bitch about it. And,
sure.
Yeah. But now it's like, okay, clearly you can recognize it's earlier in the process. I think that's probably the key.
Yeah. What has been the some of the hardest programs you've had to deal with?
I'd answer it just the way I just described it. That is when everybody's not on the same page.
Yeah. Any particular one stand out, or you don't want to?
Oh, I could. Tony, you might have been on some of those programs. I didn't want to call you out. No, I'm joking. There's been plenty. I mean, there's been some that have, you know, there's been some that we've worked on all the way through, tooled up and getting ready to launch and get canceled, and you're like, what the heck? And then,
sure.
What taught me, you know, I told you about that product planning position before. Even tooling something up and getting ready to go, there's a lot of money that's spent to sell something, to inventory it, to move it around the world. So a lot of times when designers go, well, I can't do that, cancel this, so much hard work went into it. Well, I mean, think if you invested another $150 to $200 million
in selling,
then you lost it even more. So those are always tough to take. There's some that where it just seems like the whole process is super laborious and, you know, soul stealing. You probably know some of those are.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the ones that actually you learn from and go, okay, we're not going to go through that again.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so.
Yeah, I've been through a couple of those.
Yes,
mm-hmm. You leave a little bit of yourself behind.
Yeah, for sure.
So I have a question.
Sure.
So you kind of have a bird's eye view of designers and design within an organization. So what do you think is the future of our profession, or what is it going towards? Is it changing, or is it kind of stagnant?
Well, obviously there's a lot of discussion about this topic in if you read IDSA websites or everything else, there's this push for what's called XD, experiential design versus industrial design. to me, it's the one and the same. Like, I don't know. I feel like most industrial designers were taught this in two dimensions first, and then we moved to the third dimension.
Right.
I give my graphic design buddies a lot of hell for that, you know. But it's true though. Like, if you know, design is about how you interact with something. Of course, it has to be a beautiful object and well crafted and everything else. But if it's something that just is annoying to use, it's not a design solution. And whether if it has a digital component to what you're working on, I think it's very important for designers to understand that and not separate themselves from how the product's used or say that's somebody else's job. I think at Dell, I think we do a really good job of blending user experience and traditional ID together. I think the industrial designers on our team can cross over that threshold pretty easily as far as being usability, you know, experts in user experience. I think there's a lot of shift in education towards this notion of you must be able to design an app for whatever thing it is you're doing. Well, if that's relevant, and then that's good. But if it's not, don't force it. So I think I had this past year, I spent some time doing what we call university relations. I spent some time at SCAD. I went out there a couple of times. Also went to Auburn. I was on the corporate advisory boards. I think some of the methods of the difference between those two schools is, well, actually what I found refreshing, both are still heavily teaching model making, you know, especially SCAD.
Hmm.
Like, that's kind of their, like, you got to build out a very detailed foam model, and that's just awesome. Sometimes where I get frustrated with the designers that come into Dell is, like, they want to go put everything in a 3D right away and try to solve it. And I'm like, just build out a foam core. Like, what? Like, how did you not have this skill? You know, so I mean, there's still the process is the same, whether you're designing a ice cream scoop or you're designing a data center. You know, design process is iterative. It's about discovery and learning, and I think those skills they translate to everything. So I think the type of skills you probably have to learn a little bit more in the digital realm, but as far as understanding what all that means, but all that answers your question. But it's shifting, but I don't think the core of what a designer right. does is shifting.
Okay, yeah. So I can see that. So you were talking about how people coming into Dell, you know, might not have the skills to build a foam model. So what kind of skills would you be looking for someone, let's say, graduating or fresh out of college? What is some advice that you might give someone like that?
Well, I think we don't have a lot of what I call recent grad hires. I can speak that. We are kind of cranking up our internship program, which Tony has one coming in a few days. It's not to lose those skills or forget that you know how to do them. I think most people just forget they used to go do foam models, or they like don't lose sight of analog quick, you know, discovery. That would be my first thing. The number one trait I look for is, without a doubt, is curiosity. You know, there's to me, curiosity can trump talent or learn or build on talent all day long. When I see that people have this like an insatiable need to learn or go understand how things work, one of my colleagues, one of my peers, remember when he first joined, he told the story of where his mother had bought a color copier from a junk store or whatever that needed to be, or like he was constantly taking things apart.
Mm-hmm.
So she got so tired of it, she bought this thing. He's like 6 years old. Put it in the backyard. He took it all apart.
That was his toy.
That was like, stop taking everything apart. So I'm like, man, he's got to join our team. Like, that's an example of just, somebody that wants to learn. And I think the folks that are the designers that we have on our team that are most successful are those that are the most curious. They really want to figure out how something's going to work, and they iterate through it that way.
Awesome. Is there any particular person that you would like to see come into your team that you don't have right now?
Or a skill set?
Nothing I think of.
You haven't seen that unicorn yet?
No, maybe. Not, not yeah. I think of. the open rec shop. That's all.
Are we safe?
Are you losing them?
Yeah. It's all good.
Good. That's pretty good. Some good advice for new designers. But here's a good question for you, Michael. If you had one thing to change in your career in retrospect, what would that be?
Gosh, yeah. I don't have a good answer for that. No. You know, it's I feel pretty fortunate. So I think you can always go back. Gosh, what if I'd have stayed in Santa Cruz and done stuff? And there's I've always had this entrepreneurial bent. But I think there's things that I had ideas and just didn't do them. And then later on, you're like, damn, I
should have done that. Yeah.
That's probably what I would say were, if I had any regrets. Yeah. That wouldn't be where it's at.
Yeah.
But you know, it's interesting. People ask me, hey, did you like seek this path? And I never really did. So I think advice for young designers is if you focus on the work, the opportunities come.
Yeah.
You know, I think you've heard me say this before, and I think when I was working in product marketing planning, I wasn't thinking about I want to go work for Dell and be doing jet and laser printer design strategy. You get a phone call, you think about it. I once got some advice, don't ever turn down a job you haven't been offered. So,
true.
It's like, and I've never really been, even within Dell, I was not ever looking for a job. I just tried to beat expectations.
Sure.
And be ready for
opportunities present themselves.
Yeah. So, I would say the difficult part of that is, I think for me anyway, I underestimated the difficulty of going from being in a, an IC guy on, working in a very defined circle, and then being asked to go, all right, now I want you to go manage and direct others or former peers. That switchback, whatever you want to call it, is you can't, what got you to that, what you were doing before is not going to make you successful. And I stumbled a lot.
It's a different skill set.
And then when you take another turn, you have an even broader team and bigger responsibility. Same thing.
You're managing people that are managing the people.
Yeah, exactly. So that becomes even harder thing to go do. Mm. And then there's, obviously the expectations and the risk becomes higher. So you have to try not to lose sight of yourself in that. Yes, is what I probably would say. Mm-hmm.
All right. So your first choice was as a pilot, which I am also envious of. Second choice as a designer. What would be your third choice if you could pick a third career option? Professional guitar player.
I probably
player.
Would have gone, no, it would have been in the entrepreneurial.
Okay. Area, yeah.
Creating something, but understanding how to go do that.
Okay. An entrepreneur of some sort. Okay.
I thought I wanted to be an architect.
Yeah.
Until I worked at an architect firm when I was in high school.
Yeah.
And that was a pretty cool experience. I had my last quarter in school. Like, we had this senior development thing. So I worked in, 3 weeks at an architect firm, 3 weeks at a place where they had graphic designers.
Okay.
So I was always doing something. I knew I wanted to do something creative. I wasn't sure what it was. I actually learned about ID looking at the Auburn University catalog. It was in the College of Art, Architecture and Art. And
sort of stumble across.
I flipped the
when they actually printed catalogs.
They printed catalogs. Yeah. You got them in the mail. And my brother had just graduated from Auburn at the time.
Uh-huh.
And he's a retired Black Hawk pilot. So that's where the pilot thing came from. Anyhow, so I just I knew I was going down there to look around and at the architecture and art and graphic design school, and the page after graphic design was something called industrial design.
I'm like, what's that?
Hey, I want to go check this out. And they had their own building. It was a mock-up of a Pontiac Fiero, I remember. In this old turn of the century building, the last century, not this one.
Yeah.
It was very, and I was just like, there was renderings of helicopters on the wall. There was, they had an anthropometrics class where they had other security checkpoint of a airport mocked out of cardboard. I just saw all this different paths to creating stuff that I just didn't know existed.
Yeah.
So I said, okay, I want to do this.
That's cool.
Never look back.
Awesome. Huh. Great. Well, That's it?
Yeah.
That's it?
Yeah. Thank you.
Well, easy breezy. I actually have one more
question. Oh,
okay. Here comes the,
so,
the doozy.
Fastball.
So we recently talked about John Maida's, he gave a conference here at South by Southwest, and he went into about in saying that companies should not be design-led, or as how design is not so important. Now, you're obviously in a position of leadership. Do you think having an industrial design background has helped you? Like, do you see that as you have an edge over someone else? Do you take maybe like a design approach to the way you manage things?
Well, let me try to answer the first question. I think I heard two questions there.
Yeah,
kind of. I heard.
They're a little bit intertwined.
You mentioned John Maida, right?
Yeah.
He was actually at IDC last year in New Orleans, and he was the master of ceremonies, or one of two, and he spoke a little bit about what you just mentioned. And as far as I'm concerned, I think the absence of design thinking, air quotes here, would not be good for a company. Yeah, I think it depends on the enterprise. But I understand his point. Like, you need smart business people to run strategy around whatever solutions, creating shareholder value, whatever it may be. But they need to understand the value of design in that. I don't need to be design-led necessarily, but I think as design as a strategic pillar, equal to engineering, equal to planning it, if you will.
Sure.
So we think of it as a kind of a three-legged stool, if you will. You have engineering, technology, design, you have planning and marketing. That's your development. For us, that's our development core. And then there's a whole other sphere outside of that that helps that all be successful, and that's supply chain, procurement, global operations. It's a very complicated machine.
Sure.
Then there's a higher, a bigger strategy that sometimes I don't know the design would be at that table. I don't think we need on our board of directors, I don't think we need design.
Right.
But we're fairly large organization. Now, if you were a small organization, I think maybe it would be beneficial. I think what design does, at least the way I think of it in my career, it's taking multiple inputs from different streams or conduits of thought or influence, and being a cog in that wheel. I think how do you take manufacturing constraints, whatever the constraints are, and you feed that into a tuned design engine, it can synthesize that into a solution that fits all, helps remove constraints, but seamlessly move forward without ending up with this thing that we all regret. It's like I'm not articulating that right, but I think design can be the cog in the wheel. It doesn't necessarily drive the wheel.
That works.
I get it.
Yeah. It's like all the cogs are important. If there's one's missing, then the wheel's not going to spin properly. So
right. Yeah. So I think, at least my background was like taking all this information, this discovery, and go, okay, we have these are real constraints. Go pressure test those constraints, and sometimes they're just not real. So you have to go be the annoying 4-year-old. Why?
Yeah.
And then when you think you've got a solution, you're hopefully our imagination and our ability to think through different solutions or morphological matrix of how things might come out in different ways. Usually, that's I think works. So what was that answer your question?
So my second question was do you think you have an edge over maybe someone else in a similar position?
Of course.
Because you have a design background and you might take a different approach to solving problems.
I think where I think my background in product planning and getting exposed to things outside of working in Pro-V and Alias and trying to solve a immediate design problem, I think that's helped me immensely because it helps me with, again, with the empathy part, like I have a product planner and I know he or she has an objective or a metric, I can kind of relate to it. And then I can hopefully use, you know, my skills and my team skills to go solve that at the same time.
You're speaking their language.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's an invaluable thing. You just see the bigger picture and you see what you're responsible for, how well that plays, and then you can strategize around that because you know the whole picture. So,
I mean, that's a simple answer, but I think just being able to step outside of your sphere of influence or what you think it is and have an outside in kind of a perspective, I think that's helpful.
All right. Yeah. Well, thanks for coming today.
Thank you.
It's good having you.
Anything else on this?
I don't know.
We kind of covered it all.
Yeah, covered most of it.
Dan, what would you have been if you weren't?
Well, yeah, that's a tough one.
I'm asking you guys some questions now.
You know, the funny thing for me is, this kind of came up when we talked to Paul this morning. So, as a kid, I was always into building, you know, model airplanes and things. And I remember building them, and I was building because, in retrospect, because I admired the aesthetics of them. Not because I wanted to be a pilot or anything else at the time. I just liked the way they looked. And so I think design for me has always been kind of where I was heading. But, you know, if I was to have a second career, that's, now you're reversing it on me. I don't know. You know, I have sort of glamorous dreams of being a pilot or being like I'm into boats a lot, like maybe a boat captain. You know, is the glamour vision I have of those things the reality? Probably not, right? Something like that where you think it's glamorous.
Yeah.
You know, my dad was a pilot in the military. He actually flew helicopters in Vietnam and was an instructor on all sorts of things. But I don't know. So I sort of, it was an early age thought, okay, that would be a cool thing to do.
I've asked my brother the same thing. He's like, I can't imagine doing anything else. And he still flies every day.
So does he?
He's a life flight pilot.
Nice. I tried. Well, I'm still trying. My private pilot's license.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Tony, that's pretty cool. Me? Rock star, man.
Rock star. I had dreams, you know, in high school of being a professional football player. You know, I was the fastest guy on the team, running back, and was always doing well. And then, obviously, that didn't go anywhere.
Well, it's interesting that my Naval Academy thing, they were recruiting me for football. But that's what, I realized pretty quickly that.
Yeah. That wasn't. I still like sort of have flashbacks to, you know, being 19, 18, 19, thinking, oh, I could do it, you know, at 50. It's like, no.
Sure. Not a professional bike racer, Tony?
That too. Yeah. All of the above.
Okay. I would have probably been a starving artist.
Yeah.
Yep. That was the first, that's what I always thought I was going to be until I figured I wasn't going to make any money, most likely.
Okay. Do you still paint, draw?
I sketch.
You dabble stuff.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Does some sculpture, different things.
Yeah, but it's more of a mixture with design and and art. Yeah.
Productizing the art, essentially.
Right. Cool.
So since we're talking, I want to ask you guys: how do you explain what industrial design is today?
I always find that challenging, so I always try to come up with, okay, what are people familiar with? Most people are familiar with architecture, and so you can say it's a similar thing, but for, instead of a building, a product.
That's exactly.
And I think most people get it.
Yeah.
I would still say most people, it's gotten better, but most people have no idea. When you say industrial design, you're like, okay, so you work on factories?
Exactly. I think my parents finally figured it out.
So, or you try to say
after 30 years of doing this,
or you know, most people can envision a car designer, right? And you could say, well, it's a similar thing as that, but for products. But it's still, most people don't know.
I found the thing that works, or the most contemporary thing is, go, you ever heard of Johnny Ives? And they go, oh yeah, the Apple design guy.
Like, you're like, oh, that's me. Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
I'm just like that guy.
Sometimes you have the same degree. I
do that. No, you say I do that, but for Dell.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah, well, sometimes if I just can't get through, I'm just like, it's a scientist. Oh, okay, yeah, scientist.
Well, what made me think of was when you said art. So I tend to say it's like, think of art and engineering meshing at some intersection.
Yeah.
Well, they used to call it the applied arts.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's what it was originally called back in the 50s.
Yeah.
I still haven't found the right way to say it. Sometimes I say like, oh, well, when you go to Walmart or Target, all those things have to be designed by someone. Different pitches.
John made it earlier. We watched Tony and a bunch of us got together and watched a video, kind of a small documentary on product design. And the product designers in it were all app designers. And we were like, all the industrial design guys were sitting there with all the UX guys and going, they have just stolen our profession. Pretty interesting to see the visceral reaction of designers sitting next to the graphic and the UX.
Well, if you look at here's the thing though, if you look at the numbers of jobs and opportunities out there right now, people hiring, it's like five times the amount.
10 times more.
Yeah.
Well, but they call that product design.
Yep. It's still a product because it still has to serve a function.
These were all the guys at Facebook.
It's bridging, in my mind, bridging graphics and traditional product design and usability, all kind of bridging all that together, but not exactly any one of those.
Yeah. This is kind of interesting how the vernacular shifted from UX app design to product design, and I just, this is.
That's what it's become. Does that mean we're relics?
Possibly. There's always been this long debate. I remember 20 years ago, we should change the name of the Industrial Designer Society of America to the Product Designer Society.
Yeah.
I remember those articles.
And yeah.
Thinking,
gosh.
But if everything's turning into a screen that you touch.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Somebody's got to make the hardware.
Yeah.
And understand what it is.
It's got to manifest itself somehow.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. There's always going to be a product somehow.
Somewhere.
Someone's going to listen to this podcast 100 years from now. They're going to laugh.
These guys were called industrial designers.
Wow. That's crazy.
Well, supposedly they have... AI software that can design products.
I've heard of that, but I'd still kind of question, like, can a computer be creative and create art? I still think there's a human aspect of that.
I think it can because it can generate infinite possibilities.
Obviously, this is a whole another complete topic in podcast, but
it'd be a good one.
Yeah,
we have to find an expert.
Hmm.
AI person.
Yeah. Then the question is, what is art? That sort of brings that all out. But
yeah. Well, thank you for having me.
Yeah. Thank you again.
Awesome. Good times.
Thanks, sir.
You're the best. Best manager I've ever had.
I remember when you came into Dell.
That worked.
Doing printer stuff with Pedro.
Yeah.
That's when I was still there for a little while.
Yeah. I still see your Manhattan displays everywhere.
Yeah, that's right. Those stuck around for a long time.